Hello and welcome to this new episode of the Songwriting Idiots podcast, the show where every month, usually, me and Dan write and record a song on a topic and in a genre decided by you, the listener. But as I'm sure you're aware, we're still in between seasons. No idea when this is actually going to come out, but let's assume we're still in between seasons. And we have quite a special little series of interviews lined up. That's basically what we've got in store for you today, isn't it?
Yes. Today we are joined by a very special guest. We're joined by Luke Layfield. Hello, Luke.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi. And Luke, me and you have a bit of a funny history. I met you in a very peculiar place. Not the sort of place you tend to meet people that you then record a podcast with. But we met in a laundromat, right?
That's correct.
You probably don't remember me at all, but I remember being there because I was there to see a gig, believe it or not, in a laundromat. And I have no idea why it was in a laundromat, but it was one of the coolest gig venues I've ever been to because there were people literally washing their washing during the set. I have no idea why it was set up there, but it was an awesome venue. And I saw you and another band, and you were really cool, and I thought it was awesome that you were from the UK, so we had a bit of a chat afterwards. But was that one of the weirdest places you've ever played?
It's up there, and do you know what? It's not the only laundromat I've ever played. I played in one in San Francisco as well.
It's a thing. Is playing in laundromats a real thing?
I'm trying to remember if the one in San Francisco was like a kind of operational... Because that one in Vienna, from what I remember, was very much like, yeah, people are still doing their washing. The one in San Francisco was really small, and I wonder if it was just called. Well, I don't know if it was still that. It could have been. I don't always remember everything. But
certainly up there on your list of weird places to play.
I mean, it kind of makes sense for a singer-songwriter, doesn't it? You don't need a bassist. You always have kind of a low-end rumble going on from the washing machines. So that's cool.
That's true. And I remember particularly, this is really stuck in my mind from that night. The other band that were playing, they were like a full band, right? They had a drummer and a bassist and a keyboardist and two singers and a guitar, I think, as well. And there was one song which was quite like a calm number. It had a very calm kind of outro, and it was kind of very emotional. And then at the exact moment that it ended, the washing machine behind them also ended. And it was a beautiful moment. it just stopped spinning, and everyone was like, oh.
That is beautiful.
And Luke, we wanted to get you on the show because you are doing quite an ambitious, fairly funky project that is not too dissimilar from ours, right? So for listeners that haven't listened to us before, Ralph and I try and write a song every month in a new genre and on a new topic. And the whole reason we did this was to kind of improve our songwriting and hopefully impart some things along the way to you guys about what we've learned about the songwriting
and
process.
Force ourselves to improve, yeah, most importantly.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And Luke, you have taken that challenge to a whole new level. I saw that you're doing a 52 song challenge, right? So a song for every week of the year. We thought, well, then we have to get you on the show. So tell us a little bit about what inspired you to start this 52 song project.
Well, I started, I guess a small amount of backstory is helpful. So I started making music sort of around like 2004-05, and then between 2006 and 2015 I released 5 albums and did a lot of touring, but those albums were all made in like a, well, the first two were sort of made at home with my drummer, who was like a producer, so they were kind of like bedroom recordings, and then the other three were made in like, you know, like legit studios. But throughout the time I was making music, I never really had any recording skills myself. It was like one of those things I always planned to gain an understanding of GarageBand or Logic or whatever, and just be able to record demos and stuff myself. And I just never did it. So whenever it came to an album and I had to like record some demos to send to the band or whatever, or to send to the producer to give an idea of what was going on, it was just like a phone demo, you know, like a voice memo or whatever.
Sure.
you know, which is fine for giving an idea of what you're doing, but like it doesn't enable you at home to kind of start putting the song together.
It's a very one-dimensional way of showing it, right? Whereas if you can do it and record it as a semi-okay demo, I think it gives people a much better idea of what you're after, right?
Yeah, well, they just all sounded horrible, to be honest. I mean,
yeah, yeah, it's very low quality, grainy, yeah.
Very low
especially
quality.
Especially in 2006, you know, phones in 2006. Not great.
Well, I don't think I was doing it back then, but I mean, yeah, so I just... I mean, I haven't been making as much music since I made that record 5 years ago. I mean, I have like a, you know, like a grown up job now, and I'm not doing so. I guess I'm not pursuing music as like a career so much, but it just frustrated me every year that went by, and because I still want to make music, and I hadn't figured it out, but I also don't want to spend as much money on recording music as I did in the past because. You know, to be honest, there aren't enough people listening to it to warrant the kind of expense, right? There's no, right. I'm not going to get that money back. So I just thought, I don't know. I just kind of was finally tipped over the edge just with a couple of conversations with friends about recording. And then a guy who was living with us for a while bought me this cool book on, it's called Mirror Sound. And it's about like it's interviews with artists who do like home recording. So like some bigger artists, some smaller artists, and like varying degrees of, because lots of stuff is made at home now, right? And I was just like, no, I can do this. You know, I've otherwise I'm just going to die, right? And I'll never have learned to record music myself. So,
and I think a lot of people have been inspired by someone like Billie Eilish, right? Because she kind of famously produced a lot of her music with her brother at home. And that can really show you what you can do. And even on Logic, I don't know if you've seen this, Luke, because I know that you use Logic on Apple to record your music, but you can even see their demo project of one of their songs, and you can really see it. Yeah, they literally recorded this all on Logic, which is something that you can buy pretty cheap. Everyone can really kind of get it. It's not prohibitively expensive. And they recorded it in their bedroom at home, and you can still produce something awesome. I mean, Phineas has got a whole bunch of producing experience, I think, that he brings to it. But still, you can make something fairly cool just kind of by yourself in your bedroom if you put it.
It's so much cheaper as well. I know, like back in the day, I think Logic was in the region of like £800 or £1,000 or something.
Exactly.
Buy one version, and you had to have like this key for it. And then when that version was out of date, you've got to buy another one. And now it's like £150 or something. Like it's not very much money, and you get free updates and stuff. So I mean, it's the price is, yeah.
That's still kind of the deal for Pro Tools, right? It's really just that a part of the market seems to have changed in favor of us independent small musicians, right? But back in the days, you know, when Pro Tools came out in the mid-90s or something, that was something you couldn't afford if you didn't run a studio. That was just out of the question, right? So
yeah. So I just thought, I quite like an ambitious challenge. I think doing something like this can be, you know, obviously it can be like difficult and it can be a real pain in the ass, but it's also like sometimes it can make it more of a chore than maybe you intended. But I also think like when you sort of want to get your, when you sort of want to get going with a new habit or like a new skill or something, having something quite punchy to aim for, like forces you to get into it. And that's, you know, definitely what I found.
Totally get you. And I think with songwriting, for example, if you see it as something that you have to do regularly and you keep having to make music, obviously most of those songs are going to be pretty pants, right? In like the grand scheme of things, they're not going to be world-beating songs. But what you're doing is you're training your songwriting muscles, I guess, and you're forced to experiment because you can't always use the same four chords because then every song will sound the same, right? You're really forced to try out new things and forced to look at maybe even different genres that you would normally look at. And then when you actually have maybe finished this project, you can then look back on all of this work and say, and all the skills that you've learned through it and say, okay, now I have that. And then when the kind of inspiration comes or when you feel like you're in the mood to write a song that you really want to, you know, that is, you know, showing something a bit deeper, or you're not being essentially kind of forced to write, then you can fall back on all of that stuff, and that will, you've got the tools then to be able to let the creativity flow maybe a little easier.
Yeah, totally. And I also think like anything that we like, or that we, you know, that we want to, I don't know, if you read interviews with writers or artists or, you know, whatever it is, anything that we do for fun that we enjoy is also if you're pursuing it quite seriously, has an element of like worked it right. You just sit down and do the thing, whatever it is. And that's how you get better. And I also think there's, it's interesting what you said about like, you know, if you're producing a lot of stuff, you know, it's not all going to be good. I also think that's true, but I think we surprise ourselves with what we can do in a short space of time. I think, you know, we're our own worst critics. Like we're quite cruel to ourselves. And when you have to, I found that like stuff that I would have thrown in the bin at an earlier stage, but that I've had to kind of persevere with because I've only got so much time to do a song each week. I've often been surprised at what I liked at the end. You know, the songs that I thought would turn out, you know, that I thought were great at the start, maybe I didn't love so much at the end. Other things that I thought where there wasn't as much to work with turned out to be, you know, I turned out to quite like them. So, yeah, it's just, I think you learn a lot along the way and not necessarily what you expect to.
Yeah, absolutely right. And I think Ralph and I can really relate to what you said about kind of when you have a limited amount of time, you kind of work with what you have, right, Ralph? I mean, like when we do our, you know, our normal shows, we have a month to kind of learn a new genre and listen to the music, which means we have about 2 weeks to then try and write the song on a topic that we don't even choose, and we have to learn a lot along the way. And, you know, at some point you're like, well, you think, well, I've got to go with this, and then what comes out can like say be much better than you thought when you first started it, or it can turn out much worse than when you first started it. Who knows?
There's a certain beauty to me anyway, that usually if you had all the time in the world, right, you can always go back and start from scratch if you don't, you know, if you have an idea and it feels good to start with, but after a while you grow tired and you're like, I don't know if that's going to work. But, you know, if you have a deadline in front of you, you have to go with it. You can't go back and just start anew, right? So you try and make it work, and sometimes starts to kind of come together, and you come up with some other idea to complement it, and you end up with a song that's half decent. So I think there's something to it, forcing yourself to accept, you know, maybe something like an idea that you're not super happy with.
Yeah.
And as I'm sure many of our listeners know, I think all songwriters have more half-finished songs than finished songs, right? And this really forces you to finish a song. I think that's key, because that's I think 80% of the battle, for me at least, is I often come up with like a what I think is a cool intro and like an okay-ish verse and then a chorus. I'm like, yeah, that's cool. And then I take a break and then I come back to it. I'm like, well, where the hell do I go from here? Yeah. Like, I've got to write more lyrics now, damn it. And I've got so many songs where I've got like the first maybe 1.5 minutes of them, and then like finishing them is so hard. Do you find that as well, Luke?
Yeah, finishing's always hard, but I think I'm always pretty driven to do it, because otherwise you lose the thing. Well, I suppose it depends what your attitude to music making is, and I really like, I don't feel like it's real until I've released it for other people to hear. I don't really know why that is. You know, plenty of people are just happy making it for themselves, but it doesn't feel real until it's emerged. So I kind of feel driven to finish it. Otherwise, no one gets to hear whatever it was—the really cool chorus that I made up. So I just struggle through and get the verse done so that you can finish the whole thing. And generally, I'm like pretty good at finishing things. I mean, obviously, I find it hard, like everyone does. But I'm quite like I like to finish things. I like completing a job, you know.
Yeah, sure. What about kind of the recording aspect of things? Because you mentioned the fact that this is your first kind of foray into the recording world, if you like. How did you find your kind of first steps into that world? Was it tough? And where did you kind of get? What were your sources of information? Let's say when you took your first steps into the recording world.
I found it difficult because I'm generally not someone. I'm quite like, I don't know, everyone's like a mix of contradictions, right? And I am, in some ways, I'm quite good at finishing things and you know, sticking to deadlines and stuff. In other sense, I don't like figuring things out that I perceive to be difficult. So I'm not like, I don't like sitting with like a knotty problem, and logic or any of these programs is just like a big, unknowable, huge, complex program. So
monster,
I just built
right?
it. Yeah, exactly. So I built it up in my mind for so long as being this thing that's so difficult, because I've seen, you know, I've been working with people who are complete experts who can do everything, and then I want to be good at it, and I just know that I'm never going to be as good as that. So I sort of, you know, that was one of the things that stopped me for a long time. But getting started was, once I finally kind of got into it, was a bit, it was easier than I thought. And I had, like, there's a friend of mine called Ben who makes music, and I asked him a couple of questions. You know, I Googled a couple of things. You can find anything on Google. And then, so I did the first couple of weeks like that. And then my friend Ben, like, because I've been peppering him with questions, and then he mentioned that a producer he's done some work with, who's obviously, you know, not got so much work on at the moment, was offering like Logic tuition, like, you know, doing like a, well, I do like a weekly lesson with him, like you do a piano lesson or something. So I've started having, yeah, like a weekly session with this guy called Bob, which has been really fun, because it's like, I guess I'm like pressed for time, like, you know, full-time job, and there's other stuff, you know, I've got a dog, got to walk the dog, and I know how bad I am at figuring stuff out. And so now I have like a weekly session with Bob, and I'm like, hey Bob, this is where the song's at this week. I'm really curious about how arpeggiating a synth works. Can you show me? And then Bob will use all his expertise to basically show me something in 10 minutes that would have taken me like hours of research, right? And I'd have just driven myself pretty nuts. So yeah, I've still had to figure stuff out for myself, but I've also had a bit of a, like a helping hand, which has been really useful.
Yeah, completely see that. I mean, I'm, everyone who listens to this show knows I'm not a huge fan of DAWs. I don't know. Don't really like to spend much time with it. And I think part of the reason is it kind of, you know, getting to know the software, getting to know what it does and how you can do all that. It feels to me like reading a manual. You know, it's not fun. It's not something you want to do. Learning your way around the software, not particularly great. So I really like this idea of, you know, actually having someone, paying someone to just show you, you know, like you learn an instrument. Because if there's one thing we can say for sure about music in the 21st century, then it's that DAWs are basically instruments, right? And you should treat it as such, and makes perfect sense to me.
Yeah, it's been really cool. And I've still, like, you know, I still, Bob doesn't like do anything for me on any of the tracks. Like, he doesn't, you know, have the file and do any work on it, but he'll have it open in front of him and you know, talk me through various things, but then I've got to go and like figure it out, and I can't do anything as well as he would have done it, but it definitely saves me a bunch of time and like head scratching.
Sure. I mean, you at least know what to do, even if you don't do it properly, maybe. Chances are,
yeah,
right?
That's it. I'll do a terrible version.
But you do the right things, you know, in general, so that's good.
And what's your setup like, actually? What do you really need to start kind of making music on a regular basis? How did you go about that?
Well, I spoke to my friend Ben, I think. I got a I mean, I guess if we make it really like accessible, yeah, you need a computer, obviously. Got a computer. I've got like a MacBook Pro. And then I got an audio interface. So I got this Focusrite Scarlett 414, 4i4, 4, I don't know what you call it. Anyway, it's got like...
So it's got four inputs rather than two or one?
Yeah, it's all got right. Four inputs. It's got like a MIDI thing on it. And I've got my piano downstairs, and I've got like a Nord Electro 2 thing, so like a keyboard. And then I bought like a little mini... MIDI controller, just, you know, to have on my desk to do bits and pieces. But I have a lot of stuff. Oh, and I've got a microphone, like just this Rode. What is it?
NT1.
A Rode NT1, exactly.
Yeah. So yeah, yeah.
I sort of, you know, I just bought. I think the audio interface was like £100. The mic was like £200, and everything else. That keyboard thing was like £50. I had to buy a couple of new. I already had some studio monitors, but they're like 10 years old, but they're fine. Oh, and I bought some studio monitor headphones, so they were maybe like £100. So I probably got set up for like £500, and and that's sort of all I've needed, really. I mean, I guess you can spend a ton of money, you can buy loads of stuff, right? And, you know, there are endless possibilities. But I found that that's kind of everything I need for what I want to do right now.
Well, I actually think it's already a lot. If I compare that to what I have, I mean, I have a MIDI controller, I have my guitar and an interface and an even cheaper mic. So, I mean, yeah, the entry one, I think, Dan, you also have that, right?
I have the same one.
So, yeah. And that's already, you know, I mean, 200 quid for a microphone, that gets you far. That gets you a long way. You know, that's a pretty decent mic. So, you know, it's really not that much money. 500 quid for all that. That's...
Well, I just compare it to, like, back in the day, I'd probably spend close to that on a day in the studio, right? So it's like, I've got endless days in the studio for the same money. I felt like, I'm a bit older. I've got like a bit of cash. I didn't want to buy like kind of naff stuff and then have to upgrade in 2 months' time because I'm frustrated like the sound quality. But you can totally do it for cheaper, right? Like you could get a pretty good setup for like 200 quid. So yeah.
And one of the tricky things I find is, so you mentioned that you've got some studio monitors, and that's great. And the recording part of it, I actually don't find that tricky, like getting the sound into the system. It's making everything sound good that's tricky, right? Yeah. Making everything sound balanced, and mixing is what we call it, right? Like getting everything so that it sits nicely and you can hear the bass, you can hear the piano, you can hear your vocals nicely, you can put some effects on them and stuff. And that really is another art form. Have you looked into that a little bit, or is that kind of the next stage for you maybe?
Yeah, well, I guess my goal with this, what I wanted out of it, was to be able to produce like pretty good demos. And I feel like I've already got there, but I don't like, I guess if I was going to make a record again, which I might do in the future, my goal is not to be able to make a record completely by myself. My goal is to be able to get further along the journey by myself so that I can then bring in other people at less expense to help finish the job, right? So I guess the thing I'm currently doing with the recording is like doing, so my background is making sort of like piano pop stuff, so piano, bass, drums, bit of guitar, fairly like standard band setup. But one thing, I released a track a couple of years ago under a different name that was more like electronic, and I also like a lot of electronic pop stuff. So I guess I'm trying to explore these two routes, one where it's like recreating what I've done in the past, and one where it's like trying to figure out how to like recontextualize my songwriting within like a kind of electronic rapper. So with the piano based stuff, I think if I did that again, this would be useful to have a demo to show people, but then I'd go and like do it in a studio in like a cool live room, and then maybe be able to put stuff on myself afterwards, like synths and organs and stuff that you don't really need to be in a studio for, and maybe like the vocals as well, so that I can spend loads of time singing out of tune before I get something reasonably in tune. And then with the electronic stuff, I guess in the future what I'd like to do is kind of get like a bunch of it together myself, and then maybe send it to someone for like finessing and for their take on it. So my goal is not to be able to produce 100% what I would call like release worthy music. Is to get me closer to that. So in terms of like the mixing side of things, I think I've got a reasonable ear. I can get stuff at roughly the right volume. I can do bits and pieces, but there's so much more to learn, and I definitely don't get stuff to like a super good state every week, because I don't have the knowledge to do it, and I don't have the time or desire, right, to do that much work on it. So I've not really been delving into lots of mixing stuff, but you know, like, so this Bob, this guy I mentioned, like, you know, one week we covered like the basics of EQ, and another week we did some stuff on like reverb, and so I kind of learn little bits every week. So I'm learning a bit, but I don't need to learn everything. Basically.
No, and there's always more to learn. And just to put it into context as well, I mean, it sounds like we have a very similar setup. I've got a Scarlett, like you have, for the interface. I've got an iMac, so an Apple computer. I've got Logic. I've got a MIDI keyboard. I've got the same microphone. And as a band, we recorded some music using that equipment, and we sent it to somebody to be mixed. Mirko, actually, who we actually interviewed him, and the episode's just been released.
Our song should already be released as well when this is out. We don't know.
Yeah,
we don't know.
Fingers crossed. And that's kind of his job, is he's a mixing engineer. And his feedback was that, you know, so I sent him the raw kind of tracks that I had recorded, and also a kind of very rough mix that I'd done. And his feedback was that, you know, mix terrible. mix useful to hear where you want the song to go, but the audio recordings were totally fine. Like, no issues whatsoever. And he's able to make something release worthy out of something that was exclusively recorded in my spare bedroom, essentially. So yeah. So it's, you know, that shows what really can be done, right, with some fairly simple equipment. And if you outsource the kind of more technical, complicated stuff to somebody else, that can be one really good way of getting a release worthy song without investing, for example, in loads and loads of studio time, right? It's pretty cool. But without further ado, Luke, we've spoken a lot about the songwriting process and the recording process, to be honest. And we would love to hear one of the songs that you've recorded as part of your 52-week challenge. And you mentioned your dog earlier on, and I have a sneaky feeling that this song might be about your dog.
Yeah, this song is about my dog.
Before we listen to it, we're going to crack open a beer.
I've been waiting for this all day. God, yeah. God, half an hour already. Come on. That open? Luke, is that a recent song that's already released as part of your project, right?
Yeah, I released this, I don't know, week five or six, a few weeks ago.
So
yeah.
Early February. All right, and it's called Best Dog in the World, and... here we go.
Hello!
Beautiful. Wow. It's really nice to hear like a love song that isn't about another human. You know, it's about an animal. It's really cool. But a lot of it applies to humans too, right? They can be a pain in the ass as well. They mostly are. What a beautiful song. Really, really awesome. Ralph, any initial thoughts from your side or questions?
I actually also find this is, I mean, you probably... You don't always just spend 1 week on the songs, right? Or was this strictly a week, or did you work on this for a longer time?
Strictly a week. Well, I had the, I spend a lot of time walking the dog, and sometimes I get an idea for a lyric or whatever. So I'd.
But you don't actually ever start a song and then don't release it until, like, I don't know, 4 weeks later and keep working on it or something and do another one between.
No, I'm just working on one song every week because I just can't. it's a struggle to get that done. So some of the songs in the project are things that I've had kicking around for a while, because I basically had this five-year period where I haven't released any music and been doing anything. So there are some things that have been lying around. This one is one of the songs where... It really wasn't lying around. Or the only thing that was lying around was like I'd been walking Heiko a few months ago, and I'd recorded like the voice memo just going like, I think I was like, you can be a pain in the ass, but I wouldn't have it. That was basically all I had, like a line of the chorus.
Okay, I think this is really solid for like a week's work. I think, I mean, obviously classic, you know, you've got a perfect song structure. You should always have, you know, a nice bridge into slow down chorus. I feel like it really made sense to me.
The halftime chorus I was going to bring up. Yeah, that's a really nice one. I like that a lot.
So, and I'm really glad your dog didn't howl through this call yet. So that is nice.
I've shut him out. He's in the garden.
Can I guess what breed he is? Just from the song.
Have a guess.
So when you said in the song that people comment on his eyes... And the markings on his side. My first thought was husky.
Okay, what's Ralph saying?
But he's called Heiko, you said.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to say German Shepherd.
Well, that's close. No, he is a husky. But
yes.
that was really good. He's a husky, but he's quite his colouring's quite atypical. So yeah, the comment about the markings on the side that's a bit of a red herring, because he is. He's like predominantly white, and he's got like sort of some black markings, but you get huskies that are pure white. The classic ones more like black on top and then white bits, they call them like the red coloring, but that's when they're like more brown. But he's slightly unusual looking, and so we adopted him, and some people think he might be crossed with a German Shepherd. So you're kind of both right, but
I also really liked, I think my favorite part of the whole song was the kind of call and response that you did. I think it was on the line, you could be a pain in the ass, right? Or was it over various lines? Do you know the part that I mean, where there was you were singing the line and there's kind of a choir in the background almost?
Yeah, I think that's the kind of like mid-late bit.
The best dog in the world.
Yeah, that's the one. Yeah, that's the one. How did you record those backing vocals?
With
make
my
them
mouth
sound
the microphone,
yeah.
But
they sound kind of choiry somehow. How did you make them sound choiry?
It was just there's probably like three harmonies, and then each of them's like doubled, and then they're like panned, right? So for the benefit of people listening who don't know so much about production, you can either have the audio coming like right down the middle. So if you're listening on headphones, you know sometimes you get something in the left and sometimes you get something in the right, and sometimes so you usually put the core instrumentation right down the middle, like the lead vocal, the piano, all that stuff, and then you pan things to basically make it sound wider. I can't explain it in any more complexity because I'm a total noob, but that was one of the things that I did some work on with Bob. And then so all the backing vocals are doubled and then panned. So you've basically got three, you've got three identical harmonies in each ear, and then the main vocals double tracked down the middle. So there's like eight voices, basically.
I think panning is one of those things that is, when you make a breakthrough with it, you're like, oh, wow, now I can really have some fun, right? It's one of the best ways, I think, to make your song sound a bit more kind of like a real song, right? Because you can make a bit of space.
Yeah, it's so interesting. Yeah, because you talk about space and everything, and it's one of those things I've heard about, and people talk about a song being wide or whatever. But when I was doing that session with Bob, and then, you know, kind of pans the vocals, because that's one of the things I like doing, putting on quite a lot of backing vocals, and yeah, it's a nice way to add some interest. And yeah, it's amazing. Like when you pan it, you're like, wow, this sounds so much better, and I don't really understand why. But yeah, I don't know. Science. It's a trip.
I mean, it's also just a really handy way to clean up the mix a little bit, right? Because if you have everything in the same place, things tend to clash, and it's, you know, and you can really clean it up very easily by just moving stuff out, literally out of the way.
Yeah, it's, I mean, if you think about a live gig, it's not the instruments aren't all kind of right bunched next to each other in an ideal situation, right? You have like the drums in the middle, and then you have maybe the guitar on one side, the vocalist somewhere, the bassist somewhere. They're not all bunched together, as long as there's space for them to not be bunched together, right? And it's
kind of one of the things I don't. It's one of the things I don't really understand, because it's like, well, at the end of the day, the sound all just comes into, you've only got two ears, right? So it comes in there. But like, so
most of us, most of us only have two ears.
yeah, most of us, yeah. But like, I get that there's this like width and stuff in this space, but it's like, I don't quite understand how that then translates when it, you know, when it goes through the headphone wire and into your ear. But
it does somehow.
Exactly. We don't have to understand it. We just have to do it.
We are idiots after all. Yeah. It just really works. And you said that you were, you know, you came up with kind of that main vocal hook, and that's the line that I remember the most from the song, right? You can be a pain in the ass, but I wouldn't want it any other way. That you came up with that kind of as you were walking along. So what was your process, sort of briefly speaking, what was your process in creating the song? So you started with that hook, and then did you then write some chords, or did you think of the melody first? How did that come together?
Well, generally, I'm much more of like a melody guy. And I'm one of the things I'd like to get better at this year is writing lyrics. I don't really think I'm a particularly good lyricist, but I think I'm pretty good at writing songs. You know, like it was nice that Ralph commented on the structure of the song. I think that's one of the things I'm good at, like just having the song feel contained and like nicely weighted. But I don't think I'm a good lyricist. The lyrics are kind of a means to an end, right? You've got to have, if you want to be writing pop songs, you sort of got to have some words there. So, yeah, I think I finished off the chorus first, probably. And then I was like, I just had no idea what the verse was going to be. So I just kind of, you know, just started tinkering on the piano, just kind of slapped down like four chords. And then I guess I was like, well, I want to write this, like, I guess like love song about my dog. What am I going to talk about? So it was then just kind of getting down his attributes. I mean, it's all like, it's not particularly mysterious. It's all there in the lyrics. It's basically about the fact that, you know, he's really good looking, but he can also be like kind of annoying. He has medication for his epilepsy. He farts a lot. Like, it's basically just getting all these kind of character traits and then just trying to get it all to, you know, be like lines of a certain length and to kind of scan correctly. But it's quite, my lyrics are usually pretty like simple, so it's just kind of getting it down, and I don't do a lot of like finessing on it, I guess,
or abstract kind of lyrics where people have to sort of guess what you mean.
And in terms of what thing comes first, I don't know what it's, well, I know it's different for lots of other people, but I kind of feel like it's almost like I hear the lyrics and the melody together. I don't feel like I'm sure some people sit down and really like map out the melody and kind of like craft it. I almost feel like it kind of comes to me with the lyrics, like it all just sort of coalesces and I'm like, oh, it's there, and then I sort of tweak it a bit, but it just kind of comes like all at one time.
That's so interesting, because I'm also not big on lyrics, so it's always, I mean, obviously language comes into play and everything, but I actually, because of that, ended up writing all my melodies on guitar, and then just I have to find words that actually fit in whatever melody I come up with. So that's still a very different approach, coming from, I guess, a similar problem. So,
but I think a lot of people do that, and that's kind of what I would like to get more into, because I would like, it's almost like my lyrics come out so quickly, and I don't think they're great, but like they're there, and then I can't get rid of them. They're kind of like stuck. So one of the things, I just got this book on songwriting called How to Write One Song by Jeff Tweedy, the guy from Wilco. And it's nice. It's kind of like a little, it's a really small book, and it's kind of like a primer on how to get started writing a song. But he's got some cool tips for like generating lyrics and stuff. And I want to kind of explore over the next few weeks, like different ways of, I just feel like I'm in a lyrical box and sort of have been for the entire time I've been writing songs. And I'd like to start creating some lyrics that I don't think any of my lyrics are like totally terrible, but I don't really feel super proud of any of my lyrics, right? So I'm kind of fine with them as part of the song, but I'd love to kind of maybe explore kind of what you're talking about, Ralph, right? Like more like having a great melody and then kind of putting the lyrics in more slowly. We'll see how it goes.
For me, it's completely the other way around. I am more of a lyrics guy, I would say. And the melody is actually the last thing that comes to me, I would say. I tend to think of interesting lyrics, almost like when you're walking the dog, Luke. I will be kind of out and about on the bus or something, and I'll write down something that comes to my head if I see someone say something, or something will just pop into my head. I'm like, ah, that could be an interesting hook, or that could be an interesting line in a song. And then I will try and write kind of an interesting, for example, chorus, but without a melody really in my head. And then I'll start kind of thinking about how could I sing this. So for me, often the lyrics come first. So it's just very interesting to see how three different people can approach writing a song in three totally different ways, right?
Yeah, I like the way you do it, and that's kind of what I'd like to, because it's the lyrics just become an afterthought to me by the time I've got the melody or whatever, and they're just kind of like spat out to kind of fill a gap. And I would like to be more thoughtful about the way I create lyrics. So maybe I need to get on a bus, like, well, not right now, but
maybe go for a walk. It seems like walking your dog is a good creative space for you.
Well, you've got to do something with that time, haven't you?
Yeah, exactly. And you just go for a wander in your own head as well, and see what comes out. And write it down, because I always regret when I don't write things down, because I will always forget them. It's like a dream, right? When you wake up and you're like, oh, that was an awesome dream, and if you don't kind of make a note of it or tell someone right away, you'll just forget it 5 minutes later. I think that's really important. I mean, I just write it on my phone. I think that's the best way to do it.
Yeah, I've got a horrible memory. If it doesn't get written down, or like if I don't create like a voice memo of a melody, like it's gone.
Yeah, I think that's the nature of it. I mean, I think that's the same for almost everyone, right? You come up with some cool melody idea, or even you know, words, and if you don't write it down, record it, that's it. It's your one chance. It's like one thing I realized, and I think that might actually be just a little like a method to work around the limitations we might all experience with lyrics. And you did that with this song, and I assume you also do it with many other songs, and we certainly do. It's just to make it a bit more humorous, so you don't feel like you have to come up with crazy good lyrics, because it's kind of a funny song anyway, so it's fine. And I find myself doing that all the time when I'm like, I don't really know what to write about. I'll just make it a funny little song about something odd, and I can get away with not having to come up with super deep lyrics, and it usually helps.
Yeah, that's funny, because that was the one thing I was nervous about with this song, because obviously it does have a slightly humorous edge, but I had no desire to write like a sort of funny song. The one thing I was nervous about with pursuing that song that week was that it would come out like some kind of Tenacious D-esque kind of comedy song, and you know what, it's just not something I want to write. So I was nervous about that the whole way through. Again, like one of those things where maybe, you know, if I was, I might have stuck it in the bin on another occasion. I was like, can you really write a song about your dog and have it not be like, like really silly? But I was quite, obviously it's got humorous elements, and there are some lyrics that are like quite funny, but I also think it's got this, I don't know, it's got this kind of like wholesomeness to it as well. And I've had a few messages from people saying they find it quite like touching. I mean, I guess it's like if you've got a dog, you don't really have many songs that you can, there are not many songs about the love that people feel for their dogs.
All that I can think about is the Blink 182 one, and that's not what you want to do.
No, that's not the one.
That's brilliant. But what I like about it actually is it's obviously got a humorous element to it, but I think it comes from honesty. And I think you're really honest in the song, right? Because you talk a lot about kind of the difficulties of having a dog, right? Like you've got to, you know, take it for a walk and give it loads of medication, and it leaves fur everywhere, right? Yet you still love it. And I think that's why it's kind of humorous, because everyone can relate to it, right? Even people that don't have a dog probably can relate to it. So I wouldn't say it's humorous just because you want to make it humorous, like Tenacious D do, right? They make humorous songs because they want to make people laugh. I think people would laugh at it because they will see themselves in the song, because it's honest and genuine, and I think that's cool.
Yeah, I think it's sort of cathartic in some ways, because like my wife and I adopted Heiko like almost 3 years ago, and we didn't know he had epilepsy, and he does have. I mean, he's not, to say he's a problem dog would be an exaggeration, but he does have a certain amount of quirks and stuff. And there are definitely, I'm sure, like all pet owners have times when their pets are annoying, but there's lots of stuff that we expected from having a dog that we haven't got. Like for example, Heiko's not particularly affectionate, right? Like if you walk in the door, he's not coming up to you and jumping on you and kissing you. He's very aloof. He doesn't amusingly recently he started like playing with a ball a bit, but like he's not kind of toy driven. Like the only thing he's kind of into is food. So like all these, you know, these ambitions that you have for your dog, like you think you're gonna be in the park and like throwing the ball and your dog's going to bring it back to you and just be there like, oh, what can I do now? So we don't have all of that stuff with him. And it's kind of, you know, it sounds like a bit of an exaggeration, but it is kind of like disappointing, right? Because you have these goals for what you're going to have and it's not there. But despite that, like we love him. But sometimes you have to make the active choice to love him, because it's like he can be like really annoying. And if he has a seizure in the middle of the night and you're cleaning up his pee, like that's not very fun. So I think, yeah, like my wife and I found it quite like it was like this solidifying of the way that we feel about him.
That's really nice. And he's still the best dog in the world for you, right? That's really cool.
I mean, every person thinks that about their dogs. So, I mean, that's the nice thing about the chorus, I guess. Well, like certainly the end of it, like my wife's just done this course and like lots of the people on the course had dogs and I was talking about their dogs all the time. And one of them was then singing this song to her dog. Everyone thinks they're rare dogs, but my dog actually is the best dog in the world.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, officially. Yeah. Luke, thank you so much for sharing that song with us. Really, really cool. And I hope our listeners now come and join the bandwagon listening to your, obviously the ones that you've read so far, and the remaining, however many are left, what, 40? Something, yeah, we're at the end of February, so you've still got some way to go. And they can find you on SoundCloud, right? You've got a very, very cool SoundCloud address, right? SoundCloud.com/just Luke, right? Luke,
that's correct, yeah,
very nice. Where else can they find you?
My website, which is Luke Leighfield, LEIGH Field.FYI. And you know the other things. If my name is on this podcast, which I assume it will be, you just put that name in, and
we'll put it on.
Like then. I'm the only person with the name, which is nice.
That is nice. It's going to be in the show notes, obviously. You know, all the links to all the stuff we mentioned: website, Instagram, SoundCloud, everything down there.
And it's every Thursday that you bring out a song, right? That's your commitment. Every Thursday, the new song comes out.
Yeah, I haven't missed a deadline yet, but there's been a couple of close calls. but Thursdays.
Look, at worst case scenario, you just put out something a cappella.
Well, that's the funny thing. Like, where I kind of thought, like, oh, some weeks it's just going to be like a little snippet or something. But then when you've, done, what have I done now? Like 8 on the trot, where they're quite like fully formed. I now kind of feel like anything else feels like a cop out, right?
You so. Set the bar too high. Error. Set the bar low.
Oh, yeah, I know. I know.
Well, it's been a pleasure to have you on the show, Luke. Thanks so much for sharing your thoughts and processes with us. And good luck for the rest of the year and beyond, of course.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. And I'll need your luck. I'll need something. It's I try not to think about the other 44 songs that are to write because that feels like quite a lot, doesn't it? But you know, 1 week at a time.
And we'll be there for the ride. Yeah, thanks again. And for everyone out there, do check out Luke's stuff on SoundCloud and everywhere else. Links, as mentioned in the show notes. And I guess we'll still be back with more interviews before the next season hits. I have no idea when this is out. Anyway, follow the show, follow us on Instagram, all the stuff down there. And thanks again, Luke, and see you all next time. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.